Bhagavad Gita, verse 62. Om Parataya Pratibodhitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Katitam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamrita Varshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvam Anusantadhami Bhagavad Gita Bhagavadvaishinim. Chapter 18, verse 62. Tameva sharanam gacha, tameva sharanam gacha, sarvabhavena bharata, sarvabhavena bharata, tat prasadat paran, Paran Shanti, Tat Prasadat Paran Shanti, Stanam Prapsyasi Shashvatam, Stanam Prapsyasi Shashvatam. Okay. Tam Eva Sharanam Gacha Sarva Bhavena Bharata, Tat Prasadat Paran Shantim, Stanam Prapsyasi Shashvatam. He's giving Arjuna some final instructions. This one is so beautiful. Tam eva sharanam gacha. Gacha is an imperative. Sharanam gacha means may you seek refuge, take refuge. Sharanam gam, sharanam gacha. May you take refuge in Him alone, in Bhagwan and Ishwar alone. Tam eva, okay? Tam eva sharanam gacha. Sarva bhavena, with all your heart, your whole being. So with all of your heart, may you take refuge in Bhagwan, in Tam eva, in Him alone. Hey Bharata. Bharata is a name for it. Address for Arjuna. Tat prasadat, then from his grace, from Ishwara's grace, tam prasadat, param, param, shantim, stanam, prapsyasi, shashvatam. Then from his grace, prapsyasi, you will gain, you will attain that stanam, that state, that place. We'll talk about what place means. That place which is param shanti, absolute shanti, means Brahman. That stanam, that place, that abode which is param shanti, absolute shanti, which is shashvatam, timeless. It's the nature of Brahman. So, that which is Brahman. So, the whole, a couple of things. First, Karma Yoga. The whole Karma Yoga Buddhi is for the mumukshu. It's not for the samsari. It's for the mumukshu who has become a jignasu, means one who desires knowledge. The mumukshu is the one who wants liberation, desires a desire for liberation. That one quickly becomes one who desires knowledge. There's a conversion that takes place from the desire for liberation to the desire for knowledge. Because you can't become infinite. You can't become timeless. You can't become changeless. You either are that or you're not. Within the creation, there is nothing that is not bound by time and change. And so if the truth of your nature is this body, mind, sense organs that exists within time and space, then the best you can hope for is some sort of a practice that can mitigate the trauma caused by continual change and the continual upset brought about by raga dvesha. It's a continual upset because any raga, a desire can be filled, but it's not a snapshot now. Because every raga and every dvesha, every desire, every trying to become whole in this continually changing creation can only give me moments of shanti. Because if I'm dependent in any way upon duality, duality is continually changing, so the most it can do is give me little snapshots, little experiences of shanti. Because I'm dependent upon this changing world to come into some sort of a position which is pleasing to me. But then it doesn't stop there, because that's not the nature of creation. And so, if this is the reality, all I can do, and I think in the Buddha, different forms of Buddhism are good at this, is coming across practices of non-clinging that can help me live within this duality in a way that is as painless as possible. It requires the continual non-clinging so that the creation can just kind of flow, move as it does with my not making any ripples. And so then my mind can enjoy some sort of shanti. The problem with it, and that's useful also, but the problem with it is that there's a continual maintenance. I have to maintain an attitude. Mm-hmm. Right? And so that leaves me in the sense as one guy said, I'm a spiritual maintenance man. You know? I haven't discovered my freedom. The problem is that the freedom that I'm looking for can't be discovered within duality. And so if this is all there is, then there's really nothing I can do to become free, nor is there anything I can know to make me free. Because whatever I know will just confirm the fact that I'm bound by the ever-changing nature of creation. So then, I'm put in a position to say, is there any part of me that is free by my nature? And if so, what is that? Because whatever it is, I can't see it. I can't experience it as an object. So if it's there, somebody has to hold up a mirror to it, I might say, for me to discover that, because I have no pramanas that can give it to me, because all the pramanas that I have only take me within duality. And so therefore, the mumukshu, the one who wants to be free, discovers, because as a mumukshu, they deserve a teacher and they come to a teacher. And then that teacher, the job of the teacher is almost immediately, is to make the student understand that the desire to be free has to be converted into the desire to know, to gain knowledge of myself. And now this is going to break down to either there is no self there to gain knowledge of, or the self that you gain knowledge of, you will just decide you were right all along, samsara is an unending, situation, that you are samsari. Or there is a knowledge of yourself which is free. And so then the question is, does that knowledge exist? Does that knowledge exist? Do I exist? Does the free self exist? A self that is free from time, that is whole and complete and not subject to becoming, subject to raga and dvesha. Is there a part of me, and Nachiketa says to Yama, is there a part of me that's like that, that's free from dharma and adharma, that I don't have to be doing this all of the time? Is there something that's whole and complete as I am? Is there something that survives death? He asks all these questions to Yama, to Lord Yama. is, please teach me that. Yama, in the Katha Upanishad, goes, no, don't ask me that. That's don't ask me that. All the God, you know, I'll give you all of these things, all of these pleasures. He goes, they're all possible pleasures. Let me give you those things. And Nachiketa just continually says, no, this, you're the Lord. You should. You're the one person that can tell me this. And so when Yama is convinced that Nachiketas is really a mumukshu, that he's not kidding, that he doesn't want all of these other things really, along with knowledge, give me this and give me that and give me this, and let me have some little knowledge too. No. Mumukshu means you have to know. You have to know. You have realized that there is no real freedom or solution to my becoming a whole being in this world. It's not possible. And there's nothing I can do about it. It's not my fault. It's the very nature. I have to realize that. Because otherwise I could become a little better, you know. But no, I realize that it's not a solvable problem. And so you throw your hands up to Bhagavan and you say, is there any way for me to really fulfill this drive of myself to be whole and complete? Because it's not a drive to become whole and complete for the moment. You know, I want to be free of all of it, you know. And so the teacher then makes you understand this problem, that if that moksha exists, if you can gain that liberation of being whole and complete, period, then that is who you have to already be. Because if you're going to become it, then you already exist within time and space. Mm-hmm. So you already are that. And so then it becomes a question of gaining knowledge, gaining self-knowledge. And the whole Upanishads, the Prakarana Granthas, the Bhagavad Gita, are only teaching methodologies to hold up a mirror to yourself. So this teaching and Karma Yoga itself are only meant, the Karma Yoga, it's only meant for that jignasu, for that mumukshu. Karma Yoga is not for the samsari. For the samsari, then they are bound by and value following Dharma and doing a lot of dhanam, giving, and all of these various things, all within Dharma, so that they can get a better next birth and they can go experience heaven worlds, and they'll be protected by Dharma, protected by Bhagavan, within this creation, so that their desires can be fulfilled and the dveshas can be kept to a minimum. More punya, less papa. Better birth. That's the samsari. The mumukshu should have, and most likely does, because you've come to this knowledge, you already have a solid foundation in Dharma. Or you wouldn't have the emotional space. You wouldn't have the emotional space to inquire. And so Karma Yoga talks a lot about Dharma, but it's not Dharma so that you can accrue punya, so that you can have a better next birth or go to the heaven worlds. That's not what it's about. It's I want to live within in Dharma so that I can gain the antakarna shuddhi, the emotional freedom, because I'm not bound by raga dvesha. So I gain an emotional freedom that gives my mind enough shanti, right, to recognize myself. The mind becomes like a clean mirror. The more shanti I have, the more I'm within Ishwara, within Dharma, the more my mirror, the mirror of my mind, is very shiny and clean. And the more shiny and clean the mind is, the more my being comes to the forefront, even though my being's not moving at all. Right? It's just that my mind is disappearing in its quietude. My body is disappearing in its relaxation. My body isn't beckoning to me to do this and do that and take care of this ache and that ache. And my mind isn't beckoning to me to get rid of this hurt or this, you know, trauma or all of these things, you know. Like say your body Swamiji talked about this one time when he was in tremendous pain from a surgery on his heart that had gone wrong. He was in unbelievable pain. He said that pain was so much that I could barely, and he was able to do it, but he said, I could barely keep my objectivity. And most people wouldn't even think about keeping their objectivity, but Swamiji, you know, to not lose himself, to not have the mind be pulled into that pain, you know. So you could think for yourself, say you have a hangnail, you know, or you have a cramp in your back, or your body is hurting, your mind becomes absorbed in that pain wanting to heal it. Say you have emotional distress, emotional worry. Say you have inner complexes that have not been resolved yet. Your mind has to engage in healing activities for those things. It's just how it is. It's the same in the world. If somebody in your life is in pain or in distress and needs help, then that's, you go there and do it because you're called to do it. You know, you would be something wrong with you. You know? But what I'm saying is that the body, your body, your mind, you know, your emotional self, your psychology, your conscious, they are beckoning for your attention until they gain what we call relative shanti. Relative shanti. Relative health. And so that's why something like yoga or some of the martial arts or Pilates or these various things that we can do are so good for the body, because the body then is not calling on you for attention. Or when you're eating more sattvic food, this in the whole Bhagavad Gita, like in chapter 14 and 16 especially, they're going through part of 15. They're going through all what foods are sattva, what foods are rajas, what foods are tamas. Because these things affect the body, right? And so too, how much sleep should you get? So your body's not overrun by tamas. Then in chapter 16 and 17, so much on attitudes. What type of thoughts are rajas? What type are tamas? What type of emotions are rajas? What type? He labels all of them. And all how does it manifest? What, like, if a person's really tamasic, these kind of thoughts come. And he lists all kinds of them. When a person's rajasic, these kind of thoughts will come. So that then you can discern. You can label it. This is rajas, you know. Because then you're able to act upon it. You're able to heal it. You're able to bring your knowledge in, because these things, you have become conscious. So all of the work that the Bhagavad Gita is going telling, it's telling to us, to mumukshu. And all of this, Ishvara Arpana Buddhi, where I have my buddhi as a mumukshu, my buddhi has a whole different relationship with the world. And it has a whole different relationship with Ishvara. You know, instead of, kind of from a Hindu perspective, instead of asking Bhagawan, you know, to help me, you know, get a better next life or go to the heaven worlds or to fulfill all of these desires, now I'm asking Bhagawan to show himself to me. I don't want anything. I want Bhagawan. That's what I want. I want to know Ishvara. I want to know the truth. And I need to want to know that with my whole heart. Because any little piece that's left out, that's where there's a lack of vairagya. Because of the little pieces that are left out, as well, I want that too to be happy. But you know what? There is no ananda there. Zero. Zero. Mm. The ananda is my own swarupa, it's my own nature. And so what has to happen, that's why he says, you surrender completely, surrender Sharanam Gacha to him, to Ishwara. To Ishwara alone. Don't leave anything out. The one, that is what I'm doing. Fully. And then he says, surrender to him, Sarva Bhava, with my whole heart. There's nothing left out. I want to know myself. I want to know Ishwara. I want to know who you are. What is the truth of this whole thing? And then he says, Tat Prasadat. Then from Ishwara's grace. Now what does that mean, from Ishwara's grace? The prasada, that prasada buddhi is the buddhi that enjoys to the max relative shanti. Because now your mind isn't going in any direction that causes ashanti. The whole mind is present to Bhagawan. That's it. This is Bhagawan. Your prarabdha karma is Bhagawan. Dharma is Bhagawan. No. And so I surrender my everything, really, to Ishwara. Means I see everything as Ishwara. Because I see my prarabdha karma as Ishwara. I see Ishwara, the prarabdha karma, as Swamiji will say so many times, how to operationalize Ishwara. It's a technical term for it that we use in how to operationalize Ishwara. What does that mean? To just worship Ishwara, you know? Ishwara is all the laws. It's to exist within Dharma. It's Dharma, to follow, to be committed to Dharma. Because Dharma is like the warp and woof of Ishwara. And Ishwara is the warp and woof of Dharma. The Jiva Srishti brings about a Dharma. Jiva Srishti, not Ishwara Srishti. So Jiva Srishti is what I'm doing to Ishwara Srishti. And so now, is the Jiva Srishti, the Jiva's creation, is the Jiva Srishti in line with Ishwara Srishti? Then it's no problem. It's not creating any ripples because there's no conflict. It's what Bhagawan's doing anyway, and you happen to like that. So now there's no problem. It's invisible. Yeah. But for me, as a mumukshu, I really don't care at all about my raga dvesha. They're totally irrelevant. Because to me, raga dvesha are just giving momentary pleasures. And I'm not interested in momentary pleasures. I'm interested in the ultimate shanti of my being, which is the source of all of those momentary pleasures. And so then I become committed to Dharma, to Bhagawan, completely. And to any area where it's not complete, then that's a little point of sadhana. That's where those little holes, you know, those little holes are our sadhana. And so then he says, so from Bhagawan's grace, because to the degree that your mind is totally devoted to Ishwara, to that degree it enjoys a relative shanti, because there's nothing to upset it. So it enjoys that relative peace. We say relative because it can easily be disturbed. You just have to do a little bit of adharma. You know, it can easily be disturbed. So it's relative. But you have to hold it. You have to practice it. You have to maintain attitude and all of that. But that shanti gives you the platform. It's called upayanishta. It gives you the mind that is qualified to gain this knowledge and to hold it. It's two things, to gain the knowledge and to hold it. They use the example of, you know, in India, there'll be the fire keepers. And then the villagers will go to get some coals. If their fire has gone out, they'll go and get, you know, a pot of coals and take it back to their home. They'll carry the coals back to their home. Now, say one fellow comes to the firekeeper with a pot made of newspaper. And so the firekeeper puts the coals in the newspaper pot, the newspaper pot, and he starts to carry it home, but after just a few feet, the coals just break right through the newspaper. And so, like that, you know, our mind can be like newspaper, you know, to the fire of this knowledge. And so it's able to hold for a little bit, but as you get out the door and walk down the street, the newspaper's burned and the knowledge has just gone somewhere, you know. So I used to always have this type of experience. I've told that joke so many times. I would get out of Swamiji's class in India. It would be so clear. Everything was, I mean, was just an enlightened jnani. He'd get out of the class and walk 3 or 4 feet, and it was close over.
And it would burn through.
It would burn through. And I used to think, someday I will make it back to my room. Yeah. And someday I did make it back to my room, but I remembered. You know, I made it back to my room. You know, that's the paper. That's the newspaper. You know? And so as with the practice of this Karma Yoga, and just forgetting about these raga dveshas and trying to be here now, be with Ishwar, be with Bhagawan, and do what Bhagawan is asking of you right now. Day after day after day, my mind gains a tremendous amount of shanti, freedom, and that's the prasada. And it's that blessing, that type of shanti, that not only can gain this knowledge, as the knowledge is coming, my mind is there to receive it, first of all, and not going on everywhere. So it's there to receive it. And then when the class is over, the knowledge that has been received goes with me. Because now I've got, you know, a strong pot, a strong vessel. So that's the idea. So he says, do this with your whole heart. Take refuge in me. Sarva Bhava, with your entire being. And then from Bhagawan's grace, props, you see, you will gain. You will get that Param Shanti, which is Shashvatam. That Param Shanti, that Supreme Shanti, is the Shanti that is never disrupted, ever, at any time. No matter what is going on in the world, or what is going on in your mind, what is going on in your emotions, what is going on in your body. Because your being has never been Ashanti, and it never can be. It never can be at any time. Its swarupa, its very nature, is that. And so there's a viveka that has to take place between all of your experiences, including every vritti that you've ever had, every emotion that you've ever had. There has to be a viveka where you recognize yourself. You know? But as you more and more have that karma yoga buddhi, that recognition becomes more and more and more, and yourself becomes more and more dominant in your experience. Now, it's not any less dominant than it's ever been, but your mind is so busy and active and so involved in itself, you know, that it's as though just silently abiding there, holding, you know, that agitation. And so the agitation is more focused on itself. But what about when that agitation is not there? My mind, my self, becomes more dominant because there's nothing competing with me. And so he says, give everything to that. Give your whole being to that. And then let's do this, verse 63, which is kind of summing up again. So he says, iti te jnanama khyatam, iti te jnanama khyatam, guhyat guhyataram maya, guhyat guhyataram maya, vispirish vimrishyai tadashe shena, vimrishyai tadashe shena, yatai chasitata kuru, yatai chasitata kuru, iti te jnanam akhyatam guhyat guhyataram maya vimrishya etat asheshena yata ichasi tata kuru. He says to Arjuna, thus te jnanam akhyatam guhyat guhyataram guhyat guhyataram ya. He says, this jnanam, the knowledge, akhyatam, which has been told, maya, by me, te, to you. This knowledge which has been taught by me to you, which is guhyat guhyataram. That means which is more secret than that which is considered to be a secret. It is more secret than a secret. So this knowledge which has been taught by me to you, which is more secret than a secret. Now he says, Vimrishya etat asheshena, you considering this, thinking this over, asheshena, completely. Don't leave anything out. You have to go back through everything that I've said. This is Ishwara Bhagavan talking about what he's just told Arjuna for the last few hours. So everything I've said, Vimrishya, contemplate on it, really think about it, asheshena, completely, thoroughly think about it. Clearly think about it. Then, yata ichasi, you do whatever you want, what you want to do, tata kuru, do that. What you desire, what you want to do, having thought through everything I've said, may you do that. Okay. So that's giving a lot of respect to Arjuna, you know. Krishna saying, I've taught you, I've told you everything. You just think it over carefully, and then you make a choice. You go to take sannyasa, go off to the mountains and meditate and try to get this knowledge, or you stay here, get this knowledge, be taught, do karma yoga. You figure it out. I've taught you everything, you figure it out. But then he says, one thing he says, this knowledge which I've taught to you, which has been taught to you by me, there is no greater secret. There's no greater secret because it's about you, not something which you know, not something which you can objectify, not something which you can use your pramanas for, like your means of knowledge. Can I see it? Can I hear it? Can I taste it? Can I infer it? Can I presume it? All the means of knowledge that are available to you can only look outward. And so this is you. This is not outward. This is the subject, you. And the problem with that is, how are you going to know that? Mm. With what means of knowledge? Mm. And there's another problem here. When you are walking about in the world, you can come to know many things because your pramanas are all active. But walking around in the world with your active pramanas are not going to give you any hint about who you are. And so now, there's another problem. You know? Say you decide you want to seek out, you want to know yourself. Okay. Now, there's a problem with that. Because you want to know yourself, but the self you want to know is the one who wants to know it. So the self is hidden, you know, in the seeker. The self is the self of the one who is seeking the self. That's the problem number one. Problem number two is, say you don't want to know. You either want to know or you don't want to know. You don't want to know, there's no problem at all. You won't know. Because there's nothing about your pramanas that will give you that knowledge. Right? And so it says in one Upanishad, the person who is going to gain self-knowledge is the one who has recognized the problem and then chooses to know. Chooses to know means, I want to know myself. And I don't take myself to be an object which I can know. Okay. So then I have to throw up my hands to Ishwara and pray for a teacher That's the plight of the mumukshu. If that plight is not there, the person's not a mumukshu. Because they still think they can solve this problem. Yeah. But it's only when you realize the means of knowledge you have at your disposal will not give you the answer to this problem. It will give you the answer to things going on in your brain. It'll give you answers to the types of moods and emotions the human mind is capable of. It'll give you answers to complexes. It'll give you answers to molecules and quarks, etc. All of that. But it won't, this upadhi won't reveal myself to me. Because myself is already there revealed. Is already completely there. It's already self-evident, self-shining. But my mind also suffers from self-ignorance. And suffering from self-ignorance, it takes the self, which is totally pervasive to its the satya-mitya relationship, of course it takes the self to be it. And why shouldn't it? That's why the self is hidden in the seeker. The self, in other words, the self is hidden in the ajnanam of the seeker. Right? Mm-hmm. Because with the satya and mitya relationship, it's like saying the clay is hidden in the pot. From the standpoint of the pot, not from the standpoint of the clay. From the standpoint of me, from consciousness, I don't have a mind and sense organs or a universe. I'm just me, my being. There's no problem. But from the standpoint of the mind, there's a huge problem. Because this mutual superimposition is totally inbuilt into the condition of the mind. You know? The mind is the self. There is no part of the mind that is not the self. And so why would not the mind think that it is the self? It's like saying, why would not the pot think that it's clay. It could not be more clay. It couldn't be more correct. Except that it doesn't realize that the clay is totally free of the pot. And from the standpoint of the clay, there is no pot. So the mind needs to recognize its mityatvam in reference to the satyam, the truth of its being. And then it's able to discern that in fact me, the ahankar, is able to discern that this me, myself, is absolutely free and changeless and asanga. No matter what the mind is doing, no matter what thoughts are taking place, all of that mitya is taking place in changeless me. And changeless me can no longer be hidden in any way. It was never hidden before, experientially, but it was hidden by ajnanam. Ajnanam, ignorance doesn't put a bag over your head. It just causes you to, in this case, misidentify. Give reality, give the me-ness to the mind. Give my being to the mind, and then the mind becomes my being, right? And I become subject to change and birth and death, etc. That's the superimposition that is caused by that ajnanam. So the whole moksha is ajnana nivritti, the removal of this ignorance. The moksha between the rope snake example, in order for me not to get beyond the snake, is not really going to take place by any amount of analysis of the snake. I can have infinite analysis of the snake. But the freedom comes from the recognition of the rope. It's the same we have in this creation. Infinite analysis of the nature of the creation, which is enjoyable and a logic, math, everything. It's incredible. But it will not reveal the self. You need a means of knowledge to reveal the self, the truth of it. Because the truth of it is never going to be an object of knowledge. It's always going to be there as the very subject, the very ground of any analysis that you do. So it's never going to be seen. It's the very being of the seer. It's the being of the seer, and it's the being of the seen. So non-objectifiable. That's our situation. So here in these two verses, especially now in this one, with this guhyataram, you know, that which is more secret than the secret that's very important. He's going to run through this again also, just reminding Arjuna what he's just been taught, what he's been taught, you know. He says, think it over. Think it over really carefully, and then you decide what to do. Because Arjuna and Krishna were really close friends. Arjuna always had the utmost respect for Krishna, but they were very close. They were very close friends, very dear to each other. And Krishna will go on later and say, you know, I love you. You know, you're very dear to me. You're very dear. That relationship is drudha. It's very firm. Nothing can shake it. So let me tell you again what I think is important. So, that's it. That's Swasti prajabhyah paripalintam nyayena margena mahim mahishah gopramanebhyah shubhamastu nityam loka samasta sukhino bhavantu kale varshatu parjanyah prativi sasya shalini desho yam shubharahitah Brahmanasantu nirbhayaha Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha Sarve santu niramayaha Sarve bhadrani pashyantu Ma kaschit dukha bhak bhavet Asato ma sukhamaya Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya Mrityorma amatangamaya Om Purnamadav Purnamidam Purnat Purnamidachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha. Harihi Om.
I have a question. I was surprised to hear you say that Karma Yoga was only for mumukshus.
Yeah.
Because it seems to me that anybody can do Karma Yoga. It would be helpful for anyone to know that.
Well,
it really is. Because some people still think, you know, it's like you do an action without expecting a result or something like that.
But well, it's not that it wouldn't be useful for people to really know what it is, but who would want to really know what it is?
Well, there are a lot of spiritual seekers, I think, who don't, they haven't twinned to the fact that samsara is useful for them.
Yeah.
You know, but they still talk about karma yoga, so...
I think they make talk about karma yoga.
But incorrectly.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Their idea of karma yoga is not really what we're talking about is karma yoga. I know that it's kind of a buzzword.
Yeah.
Also, moksha is a buzzword,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
What Nirvikalpa Samadhi and what we even classify as moksha.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the karma yoga is directly related to an understanding of Ishwara.
Yeah.
You know. And so it's something that's taught along with this knowledge.
Yeah.
You know? And it's for, this knowledge is meant for an adhikari. The qualification for this knowledge is nothing to do, you can be a mlecha. Mlecha means you can be from anywhere in the world. You can be a man or a woman. You can be of any culture. You can be of any age. Those are not requirements. This is the whole... Atato Brahma Jignasa is the first sutra in the Brahma Sutras. which goes into depth about who is the adhikari for this knowledge. And it is the mumukshu, the one who has that sadhana chatushtiya, that those fourfold qualifications. And this karma yoga buddhi is really not separate from this knowledge. You know? So I understand what you're saying. You're thinking that these people should actually be taught what karma yoga actually is,
yeah.
But for them to be taught what it actually is, then they should want to know what this knowledge actually is, because it's it all circles around it. On the other hand, if you say, and I did touch on this, that say for a samsari, and it can even be a spiritual samsari, and on any level of samsaritvam, which means that you're still, the ahankara is still contained within duality, right? Understanding dharma, having shraddha in Bhagavan, following dharma, all of that is perfect. And in fact, the whole first portion of the Karmakanda is a dharma shastra, really. What are the rules? Swamiji sometimes calls it, you know, the first and second portion is a handbook for the universe. I mean, how to manage in this universe in such a way as to gain the maximum amount of happiness. And so within the Karmakanda, which is for people who are still within samsara and trying to gain happiness from samsara, it's that whole Vaidika Dharma, you know, making that very clear in terms of dharma, what brings happiness and what brings misery. You know, it's very, very clear. And say you want to go to higher lokas, you want to go to higher lokas, higher worlds, because there is less misery. There's more punya, it's more of a punya bhumi, where there's more ananda. Or say another thing, so dharma is for getting a better loka, or for getting a better next birth. But I'm still, my pravritti means my inclination is still for making myself a better lot here. And it's all within dharma. That's 99.99% of the world. And they're held within that Vaidika dharma. This world is really not for mumukshus.
And so
mumukshus are on the way out. You know, and so then it's the second part, the Upanishads, which are meant for the mumukshus, the ones, and the mumukshus are the ones who have recognized the problem. And what we call, like I'm just tongue-in-cheek saying, spiritual samsara is where the ahankara continues to be a more and more spiritual person.
Mm-hmm.
There's a spiritual hierarchy. The ahankara just becoming a more and more spiritual, more and more subtle person. But it's still the ahankara, the jiva,
mm-hmm.
that's gaining,
right.
becoming spiritual. But that's not what we're doing. You know? The ahankara itself becomes mithya. And the only one here is Ishwara.
Okay, I got two questions. For on verse 62, when he says surrender to him, how come he didn't say surrender to me? And secondly, it says that by his grace you will gain absolute peace. Is he making? Is there a because implied there? Because you surrendered, you'll get. Is it saying that's operational? Surrender produces.
Then he says. First he says, having take refuge, may you sharanam gacha, kameva, to him alone. Means, take refuge in Bhagavan alone. Okay? So, with your whole heart, hey Bhadata. Then he says, from the prasada, from his grace, you will attain. So there's a step here. It's not that surrender will give you moksha. That surrender gives you antakarana shuddhi.
Mm.
That's the prasada. And then, because he's already mumukshu, that frame of mind, that shanti, makes this knowledge available to you in twofold way. First, your mind's available to hear it. Now, the teacher can do a lot. As I've told you, you know, before, that's just last week, I think, Swamiji was such a master at making you into a temporary adhikari. by the jokes, by his love, by cajoling, just massaging your mind into that clarity, you know, building that up, the clarity, and then throwing that knowledge in to a mind that enjoyed that shanti, which was beautiful, because the thing is, that's the grace, is giving that mind, and then the knowledge gets tossed in. But the mind has to mature, you know, so that it can hold that knowledge. Because the self, the knowledge, is yourself, is your own being, you know. But the mind has to be ready to receive it. And so through that, all that karma yoga, through that devotion to Bhagavan, you know, karma yoga buddhi, your mind gains the neutralization of your likes and dislikes, and then working out all of the emotional trauma and all of the stuff that we do is part of karma yoga.
Well, does karma yoga connect to the unconscious? Does it affect the unconscious?
It does affect the unconscious, but we also, because of psychology now and because of this era, we give a lot of extra attention to. Because it's like coming to this knowledge with, you know, instead of a broken leg, you have a mind that is hurt and needs to be handled with some relative medicine. You know?
Because
at the same time, you do get a lot of grace from Bhagavan and from that karma yoga buddhi. You get so much shraddha and so much shanti, but then you still need more grace to get the right tools to handle some of these emotions and complexes that we have.
Mm-hmm.
We need the right guidance and tools for all of that, which we do have. So
that's sort of in a different category than...
It's in a different category, but it's all very related, because if you say from Bhagavan's grace, from his prasad, you will get that absolute shanti. These things will be... I take it like this, really.
Mm-hmm.
All these things will be taken care of. Bhagavan will take care of all of it, you know. Because you've totally given yourself to that. Bhagavan will take care of it, you know. And you will get that absolute shanti. Of course you'll get it, because you are it. It's not like somebody's going to come and give it to you. You are that, you know. And your mind is gaining the qualities that are necessary to hold it. You know, other than it just being like a paper vessel, you know, the mind has to become strong.
Sometimes you refer to karma yoga and sometimes to karma yoga buddhi. What's the difference?
The karma yoga is just a shortcut for all of it. If I say karma yoga buddhi, it means your mind itself is devoted, has that conviction. That karma yoga buddhi, it means your mind itself, Your the orientation of your mind is toward karma yoga. Your buddhi, that's...
So it's kind of the result of karma yoga.
Well, it's the result of... It's not just... It doesn't mean just the result. It means that...
Or the motivation, maybe.
The conviction.
Hmm.
The conviction of my mind. You know, that sarva bhava, where my whole heart is devoted to that. If I have that karma yoga buddhi, I have that conviction. That's how I view and operate in the world. That's what is primary for me. So that karma, that sarva bhava, you know, that complete, my whole heart is in it. If I say karma yoga buddhi, buddhi means knowledge, it means the instrument of knowledge, it also means conviction. So my buddhi has that conviction. That's what I hold. That's how I operate in the world. That is what, even if I fail sometimes, still, even if I fail, I bring my mind back, you know, to that. Because you don't start out as a master of something. You still have that conviction, and then like a little baby walking, it keeps falling on its little butt, you know, and gets up and keeps going. So if you have that karma yoga buddhi of a conviction to actually to bring your mind back and keep doing that, following dharma, not being so worried about your raga dveshas, but it is work. And I see, you know, I've seen all along in myself and in all of us over the years, the willingness to do the work is something that slowly increases. There's a, you know, because you can go for long periods of time enjoying Shravana, being totally immersed in Vedanta, but no real willingness to do the work. For whatever resistance, whatever reasons are there. By work, I don't mean the work of Shravana. I mean the work of being alert to your mind and being willing to pull your mind back. The willingness to do that inner child work. The willingness to bring your mind home to your knowledge. You know, to work with your psyche on the different levels, like there's the little guys inside. And then there's the conscious attitudes that are really butting up against their attitudes, which you really don't have any value for, but you don't do much about them either.
Why is that so hard, or why is there a reluctance to do the work?
Because it's hard. It's painful.
What do you mean by painful? That keeps you away?
I think it does. I think it's easier, for instance, to project the problem onto somebody in the world and then just be really angry at them. Anger is a very superficial defense. It's an easy defense to fall back on. So you project whatever you're annoyed with or angry onto so-and-so and so-and-so, or onto a political party or somebody in Russia or whatever it is. And then, or the Republicans, or New Zealand for us. And then you feel all kind of rage and hatred and anger for these people, and it is their fault, and then the problem is over and you're justified for having those feelings, and then you can just go on with your life. That is unconscious escapism. Because what will eventually happen is that you have to stop yourself and say, what is really bothering me? What is really hurting me? And then you have to go to where the anger really is, you know? Because otherwise, then you end up, it's not that you don't see all these problems, you see all the adharma, you see all the problems, you see the messes, but you have your shanti, and you do what you can, what is in your sphere to do to be helpful. But you haven't lost your equipoise or shanti, you know? So when you find yourself really hurt and angry and upset, there's something going on inside. And so you have to start saying, you know, what am I really angry about? But we can go on unconsciously just blaming the world because it is easier.
But not very satisfactory.
It's not at all satisfactory. Zero. Zero. It doesn't go anywhere. But just keep going like that. But there's no resolution, there's no maturing, there's no growth. There's just endless repetition until you die. Literally.
So, I just kind of came up with a little formula you can check and see if it's right.
Okay.
So, you can know something you don't currently know, but you cannot become something you currently are not.
Well, in terms of knowledge, in terms of the self.
Okay. Yeah, and I'm talking
only
about
in terms of the self. Yeah. You can't become what you already are.
I mean, like I can become a resident of Vermont in duality.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm speaking in the Vedanta context.
Yeah, you can only know yourself. You can't become yourself because you already are that.
Because on Sunday night, you're going through this incredible depth of you cannot become something that you
it's
aren't
not possible.
Right now.
Yeah.
Okay, or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
In the overall scheme of things.
Yeah, it's true.
But the message is you can indeed know something that you don't know now. So
that's right.
That's a stark
exactly.
difference then.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Okay. So you cannot become eternal. You can learn that you are,
yes.
Or you can learn that you're not.
Yes.
And the truth happens to be that you are, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
At least that's what they're telling.
That's what they're telling. That's right. But it has to convince you, not from its own standpoint, but from your standpoint. We have to stop now. And then.
Right.